Welcome to the Southern Mafia Podcast, your one and only podcast for the Lakeshore Boys. And I am the one and only commissioner of the Lakeshore Boys. Joining me today on today's episode to preview the playoffs is official league historian Ed Kelm. How are we doing tonight, Eddie?
Mike, thanks for having me on the show. I really had a great time doing this last year on the Southern Mafia podcast, so I'm just happy that you invited me back for another go at it. As the league historian, I hope to provide some unique angles on some of the playoff matchups and reviewing the season a little bit.
Yeah, the second annual official league or playoff preview podcast. So this might actually become a habit sooner or later. To get things started today, we are going to dive into, I don't know if it's nice to call them losers, but I'm going to call them losers because they are not in the playoffs. So starting at the top of the bottom, if you will, we're going to look at the Blazers, right? Formerly called himself a commissioner, formerly thought he was a legit player. Last title for the Blazers, 2008. However, this is his first time missing the playoffs since 2012. So good run there. His last cash was in 2019, as he was the runner up to Bushnell's championship season. So that would be AJ and the Blazers coming in the nine hole.
Yeah, and that's fitting, Mike. That's a good some good thoughts there on the Blazers, and it's sad to see a good franchise go to shit like this one did this season. And speaking of going to shit, that leads us into voluptuous two boot checks back to back here. Ever since Adam stopped running Caleb's team, it's been a really rough go. He is a two-time champion, and then little brother took the or big brother took the training wheels off, and KK hasn't been able to hang. Just historically in this league, he has the second lowest winning percentage in league history, and not a good franchise, not a good team. Although I did see KK during this fantasy season, so that actually warmed my heart. So if he had anything going for him, it's that I was able to give him a hug this year.
I'm sure that helps him a lot. So then I think the next team we'll be looking at would be, I think they call him Dr. Vodka in some circles.
Yes, vodka. Thank you, Mike. He's our 2019 champion. It's his first time in 3 seasons missing the playoffs after his franchise entered the league. He, had a little bit of a rough start missing the playoffs his first 3 seasons, but he's been there the last three, so he's missing this year. And one interesting stat, which probably didn't help with Vodka's finish this year, is that he had 9 weeks this season, 9 fantasy weeks, where he had a player in his lineup that scored one than less point. There was 1 week that I saw, I think it was week 6, where there was 3 goose eggs in his lineup. So just not going to win many games that way, not going to make the playoffs. So,
To be fair, he is an avid golfer, so he may have thought the purpose of the game was to score the lowest. We should really check that with him. Indeed. The visual cues are really an amazing thing in an audio format, so we really appreciate that. And then 3 in a row, Eddie, you're up again on, I don't even think I can pronounce that name, so I'm going to let you have it.
it's Fled, and Team Fled. I don't think finishing this low, we can use his actual team name or
What do you think the
acknowledge
team
that
name is?
that's a thing.
Yeah.
So we're just going to refer to the team as the Fled team. Hasn't had a winning record since he wed his Belle.
Oh, no.
I thought I well, I thought that this season he had a little bit more time on his hands this winter. I thought maybe he'd dedicate some of that to fantasy football. Obviously not. And now he can just get back to focus on what he really loves, which is going to Bills games, giving in to Vaca, Dr. Vaca's peer pressure, blacking out, and staggering into Bills games for his afternoon nap.
Yeah, and that's actually as I was preparing for this season, that's something that really, or this preview, I should say, that's something that really rang true to me. I really think I just need all you guys to like stop having kids, stop having jobs, stop doing productive things with your lives, and just spend more time focusing on things like fantasy football, because it just feels like that's the better approach and how we're ultimately going to have, more fulfilled lives. Now we get into the prestigious territory here as we start to enter our bottom two teams. First up, we've got the outdoor Heady Nuggets. Interestingly enough, for one of our two known non-champions, this is the first time Sunday has finished in the bottom two. I think that's probably, some people might call that the definition of mediocrity. Second year in a row missing the playoffs after 3 straight years of making it. His one and only cash was in 2009 when he lost a bit in the final. So, pretty interesting there. Some people are speculating that a change of scenery during the draft may be what the Nuggets need to change their luck, but we'll let that organization figure that out. And then we get to the bottom, the Canandaigua Connection. So, this actually breaks a streak of 3 consecutive playoff years for Groot. He is subsequently 0-3 in the playoffs in those three in that stretch. This is his fourth bottom two season, which takes the reins, or I guess is the bottom of the top of the bottom. I'm not exactly sure how you'd say that, but it does break a tiebreak. There are a few teams with three bottom two finishes. And now there are one is one with four. Groot's one and only title was in 2005, and his last cash was in 2011 as the runner up to Mitt's first championship. Eddie, as I look at these games and we look ahead to the postseason, I can't help but think there, reflect back that we've been doing this for 20 years. A lot of ragtag people mixed in that 20 years, but certainly we've steadied that ship a little bit, despite multiple efforts to kick out, some bad debtors. But I think it's really remarkable to see what the Lakeshore Boys has evolved into.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, Mike, that this is year 20. We are previewing the 20th edition of these playoffs. Of course, that's including 2002, which we're not really sure existed, but we've been at this for 2 decades. And Mike, you said a little bit earlier that you wish everybody would or everybody should stop having kids and careers and all that stuff and focus on fantasy football. There was a time before we had kids and careers and had a lot of different stuff going on where this fantasy football league caused some problems. There were some real problems in this league with message board posts and just us not giving a shit in our early 20s about whose feelings we hurt, what we destroyed. We're in there drafting through just a cloud of smoke in the Windspear basement, to just outside at Buchek's parents' house, ripping bongs, a couple of Brian's apartments, just the office at Buchek had a lot of great drafts. And, just really back in those days, we didn't care. We would go out drinking till 3 in the morning and then have this draft at 11 a.m. and just do the whole thing over again. But unfortunately, we're not at those times anymore, because of all the obstacles we spoke of. But I think it is important to just talk about and think about how this is year 20 of the league and how far we've come as individuals and how far some of us haven't come in their fantasy prowess over that time. So I'm looking forward to previewing and just want to take a moment there to reflect and think about 2 decades. Most of the same people are still here as 2 decades ago.
Yeah, we may not still live every day of our lives like the Evans Extreme 11, but we can bring it back every now and then, right? So feels good to know it's still that fastball is still in there. So without further ado, let's dive into our first game. So we've got the 1 seed Fuckboys versus the 8 seed. That would make them the 8 seed Rammers. These teams faced off in week 1, which is interestingly because it'll be the real alpha and omega for one of these teams, right? You play the first week and then the last week. So the Fuck Boys defeated Ramsey 162 to 134. These teams have no previous playoff matches, mainly because Ramsey hasn't made the playoffs since Nev joined the league. Ramsey's last and only title, again, is it's got a all titles have asterisks next to them in this league, but I think this one's got a little bit bigger one back in 2002, where not sure that actually happened. Ramsey's last cash is in 2004, so I think he probably only had three kids back then. So it's been a few years for him, and his last playoff appearance was in 2011.
And he's going to square off against the fuck boys here. So he's going to get tag team here. There are two owners of the fuck boys. They're both dudes. That's why they're the fuck boys. There was a 6-game winning streak there. Let me back up. The defending champions of the league. Nevin did a great job here coming in and turning this franchise around. You know, this is their first time as the number one seed in the franchise's history, which may not be great because only four times has a number one seed won the championship coming into the tournament, and not since 2017. They used a 6-game winning streak in the middle of the season to propel them, you know, and they lost 3 of 4 coming into the playoffs. So who knows, as their A.J. Dillon starts to steal some carries there from Aaron Jones, and, you know, the Rams running game not being the same without Darrell Henderson. Maybe is the team falling off a little bit coming into the playoffs. I'm not sure, but we will see for sure. But again, the number one seed, defending champion. So obviously they're going to have a good look at it.
Yeah. When you look at the Rammers squad, he's had a bit of an up and down season. I think that would be potentially an understatement. He started off 0-4, bounced their way back, or actually continued that fall to go 2-6, and have bounced their way back. They've been 4-2 over their last six to finish at 6-8. You know, early in the season, I told you that I liked Ramsey's squad. The only problem was he just didn't have a running back. He traded for Justin Herbert prior to week 10. And in 5 games for Ramsey, Herbert has finished in the top 7 amongst QBs 4 of those 5 times. Moving on to their backfield, right? So, you know, we thought, I think the entire league hoped that we'd be able to see a fantasy playoffs without Jonathan Taylor in the mix. As he's truly emerged as the best running back in fantasy, but you know, that's not going to happen for us. He does have a tough matchup in the first round going up against the Pats, so we'll see how that goes. Honestly, I'd probably like to see him put up a billion points in that game, though. But you know, pairing with Jonathan Taylor, he's got Saquon. You know, Saquon has really pretty much been a shell of himself this season. When he's been healthy, which is obviously hasn't been a lot, his utilization is strong. He's getting the ball a lot, but just still hasn't produced the results you've wanted to see. Obviously, their QB situation on the Giants is a disaster, but I don't think it'd be a huge surprise to see Saquon be a difference maker in this postseason if he is finally healthy. Looking at his pass catchers, you know, I think they've actually gone downhill as the season's gone on, right? Amari Cooper, pretty good player, competing for a lot of targets over there in that crowded Cowboys offense, right? They just have a lot of good players there. He's had 2 down weeks recently, so we'll see what happens there. And actually, in studying this and looking at Ramsey's squad, I found Kyle Pitts to be pretty interesting. So I think expectations on him were sky high coming into the season, and it feels like he's been a disappointment. But when you look at the, you know, the end of the day here, he's been the tight end 5. So I think that's really a pretty respectable finish for a rookie. So maybe we just had our expectations were a little too high, and probably doesn't help that Atlanta team has been a complete disaster this year. So I don't think we think much of them as a whole. So that's what I got on my study on the Rammers there, Eddie. I'm not sure if you've got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You made a couple interesting points with the midseason trade for Justin Herbert for Ramsey, and we talked about the week one matchup against the Fuckboys, and that was a 28-point difference. And you know, the teams looked a lot different back then, but you have to wonder if Justin Herbert was on the team at that point of the season, and without looking back at how he did week one, is that going to be, you know, a difference maker in that game, that week one matchup? The Rammer squad started Fitzpatrick, who had his season ended that day and only had 0.5 points. So that week one matchup could have went differently. But you have to like, speaking of quarterbacks, the value that the Fuckboys had with Matt Stafford, that was a really nice pick. And thinking back of the draft, I thought that if I had the opportunity to get Stafford, I would have liked to. And they took him in round 7, and he's the fourth quarterback went in terms of fantasy points. So, you know, definitely great value there. And you have to really love their ball catchers. And an interesting thing to think about in this matchup is those Cowboys weapons that you talked about, because there's one over on the Fuckboys squad in CD Lamb. So it's going to be interesting to see how the targets pan out this weekend between him and Cooper. And you also really have to love on the Fuckboys squad, DeAndre DeHop and Chris Goodwin. I mean, Goodwin has just been a monster recently. Brady's been looking for him nonstop. In the last 2 weeks, he's racked up 25 catches. So him and CD Lamb, who's had double digit targets each of the last 2 weeks, and then throw DeHop into the mix, it's going to be definitely a high scoring affair, I think, this week for the Fuckboys. You know, I think that it's something to really,
yeah, I think it's interesting,
keep your eyes on.
There's obviously the Fuckboys have earned their number one seed, but you know, when you start to dig into it, it gets a little bit you know, there may be some sorry Jeremy Lin chinks in that armor. Aaron Jones, you talked about Aaron Jones losing some carries. You know, what's going to happen when Daryl Henderson's back? It's hard to see how well Sony Michel has been playing. You know, that's going to be, they're going to give Henderson that true 1A workforce workload. I heard an interesting stat actually just a few minutes before we started recording here. Hopkins does not have a single 100-yard performance on the season. So it's certainly not what you hoped out of him. Obviously, the boys have drafted pretty well and are fairly deep at wide receiver. So, you know, picking up Brandon Ayuk in the middle of the season certainly helps. So I think they're certainly poised to, you know, cover up some of those blemishes. But I think it's, you know, I think they got to be sweating it coming into the playoffs a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And I, for one, am here for it, and certainly hope they lose.
Yeah, and it's you know, D Hop's a little bit banged up too. He's got a little something going on there. He's got an MRI coming up this week, and it's going to be interesting to see what the Fuckboys do at running back if Tony Pollard's back in the mix this week for the Cowboys. And you know, that adds another Cowboy into this matchup if he finds his way into the lineup. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as the weekend approaches.
Indeed, we will. So moving on to our second game of the weekend, we've got the 2-seed Prizbags versus the 7-seed, the Hoodies Heroes. Hoodies beat the Prizbags 179-127 in week 8. This is the first playoff appearance for Prizbo since his 2017 fourth place season. Interestingly enough, Prizbo defeated Hoodies in 2012 in the bronze medal match. This is Prizbo's first playoff since 2017, and he has not cashed since his 2016 championship, which I don't know, we might have to put a pretty big asterisk on that one too if we let that inbred win a title.
Yeah, and he's gonna square off against the Hoodies Heroes, who come in 7-7 on the season. That's our 2007-2010 champion, and there's no one I hate more than Keegan in this league for sure. Prisbo's close. This is an interesting matchup for me because if neither of them win and somehow Sunday gets in and advances to the semifinals, I think I'd like that better because I don't like either of these people as humans or fantasy competitors. But Keegan, he has been one of the more consistent teams in the league. He has made the playoffs 15 times in 17 seasons that he's been in the league. So only one year that he got rolled out of a car, still pretty much half in a bag from some Adirondack trip that he just drafted a terrible team. I think that was 2016, rolled up to Chatty's porch in a bag. He missed that year. And the interesting thing about making the playoffs so often is people, you expect a lot of wins, which Hoodies does have 6 playoff wins between his 2 championship runs, but only has 9 total playoff victories. And he only has 1 playoff win since 2012, which was the year you just mentioned where he lost in the bronze medal match to Prizbags. This season, Hoodie started off 1-3, battled back, including winning 3 of the last 4 to go 500 and take a look at the 7 seed. I remember on this exact podcast at the beginning of the season, there was some question about drafting a rookie Najee Harris 5th overall and maybe some question marks about how that was going to work out and strategy about taking a rookie running back so high. But Harris has definitely paid off for Hoodies this season. He's 2nd in fantasy points amongst all running backs in the regular season. And Harris has been paired nicely on Keegan's roster with the number 3 and number 8 fantasy receivers in terms of fantasy points this season. When you look at that paired together, so Davante Adams and Deontay Johnson paired with Najee Harris, that's 3 guys who can put up a ton of points on Keegan's roster, Hoodie's roster at any point. But they do absolutely have some question marks at their flex position and that 2nd running back spot. It'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend at those positions and ultimately could be something to watch for as a difference maker in this matchup with Prisbo.
Yeah, I think when you look at Keegan's team, there's a lot of talent there, right? You certainly mentioned it. Najee and Davante Adams and Deontay Johnson. The concern I have is that when you're relying on that Steelers offense, right, those guys certainly come with a floor that can be pretty scary. Ramondre Stevenson's running his ass off. I think for opponents, you hope that Damian Harris comes back healthy and they maintain that 50-50 split. If you see him really start to get the bulk of the work, that's going to be a force to be reckoned with. So we shall see there.
And Stevenson and Harrison this week going against pretty solid fronts. Both the Colts and the Titans have been pretty stingy against running backs. They give up most of their yards through the air and most of their points through the air. So we'll see how that works out with those two backs. And, obviously Jalen Hurts has been great this season, but coming off a performance where he had less than 10 fantasy points. So can you rely on him against that Washington front 4? Obviously a little depleted here with that front 4, but it'll be interesting to see how Hurts bounces back, at least fantasy wise, after a tough performance last week.
I couldn't remember if he was healthy or if last week was Gardner Minshew. And then they're coming off a bye, right? Yeah, I think they're coming off a bye, and Hurts hasn't played since before.
That's right.
So who knows? We'll see how healthy Hurts is, right? So that could obviously be of concern as well. I haven't heard anything there, but usually you don't in the during the team's bye week. So then,
yeah, my apologies. That was week 12 that Hurts had the 8-point performance
heading into the bye. That makes sense.
Yes.
So when you take a look at Prisbo, I try not to, but he started out 7-0, and then he played the Hoodies and lost, as we mentioned, 2-5 to finish the season. I think you can call that trending in the wrong direction. I've been pretty critical of Prizbo's team since the draft. My opinion on this team has not changed. When you dig deep into the roster, Dak has been the QB 13 over the last 3 weeks. He's drafted as the QB 5. So certainly Prizbo hopes to see him step his game up heading into the playoffs. He does have a favorable matchup versus the Giants. So we'll see if the Mississippi State alum can get things going there. I think there's a little bit of yin and yang here. So if the Cowboys are not a team that will throw the ball when they are leading, right? So if they get a lead on the Giants, you can see them really start to take the air out of the ball and just pound the rock, which could work out well for Prizbo because he does have Zeke in his backfield. But, it's just hard to be back. It's hard to be confident in Zeke as we head into the playoffs, right? He's clearly not healthy. He actually was had less carries. He was out carried by Corey Clement last week, and that is just not a sign you want to see. And that game, was out of hand, but got close, and still, they continue to let Zeke play at, when he's clearly not healthy. And, I think his fantasy value is going to suffer as a result of it, whether Tony Pollard comes back or not.
Yeah, and that's one thing too you have to think about from it's the Cowboys aren't playing for fantasy owners, right? They're playing for the NFC East title, which they pretty much have locked up at this point, and looking forward to the playoffs. So if they can give some of those carries to Pollard or Clement or whoever the other back is, they're going to do that, and that's not going to help the Prizbag team. And along with that, running back Josh Jacobs has been inconsistent at best. And it's really just been a crapshoot here, I think, with this roster. And there's some tough matchups for Prizbo coming into this opening round of the playoffs. So I'm not high on Team Prizbags either, Mike.
Yeah, and I think he if I move on to the other, deeper into his backfield, he gets a little bit of the opposite treatment with Josh Jacobs, right? Kenyon Drake broke his ankle, he's out for the season. So you should really see Josh Jacobs get an increase in volume. He should be more active in the passing game, which he's never really shown his career. There was a lot of talk that you'd hope they would see that in this last week. And then Jacobs fumbled, and the Chiefs returned it for a touchdown on the first play of the game. And they were pretty much chasing their tail. The Raiders were chasing their tails after that. So, we'll see if that volume proves to be worth it for Prizbo. And then, he is one of the teams, one of the few teams, maybe even two off the top of my head. Actually, Keegan's got a question mark there too, but running a three running back offense, right? So he rounds it out with Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon red hot during the middle of the season, but he's had two pretty significantly down weeks. So, we really don't know what version we are going to see. I think the Bengals can run the ball. It seems like they want to throw the ball. But maybe if you're Prizbo, you hope Burrow can light it up early, you put up a big number, and then you bleed the clock by pounding Mixon as they go. And I don't even know who they play, so fuck him. And then it's really where you start to see the holes in his roster. Prizbo did not draft a wide receiver until round 7. The emergence of Michael Pittman has worked out pretty nicely for him. He did well there. Pittman's been a solid player. He's also relying on Mike Williams, who was red hot early in the season, but he's finished outside the top 36 wide receivers 5 out of the last 7 weeks since the Chargers' bye. And we saw it last night, but I just refuse to believe that rolling out the corpse that is AJ Green is a viable strategy in the 2021 fantasy playoffs, the year of our Lord. He does round it off with Mark Andrews, though, right? Like Mark Andrews, the tight end one, coming into the playoffs, but with Lamar's status in question, that's certainly going to have an impact. Obviously, Prizbo's going to want to see Lamar out there doing his thing, throwing it to Andrews.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be we'll get to our predictions a little bit later in the show, but I think we have outlined both these teams pretty well, and they're flawed teams in my opinion, even though they both have some bright spots, and I think maybe Prisbull a little bit more flawed than Hoodies. So we'll see how it shakes out this weekend.
Looking forward to it, Eddie. And our third quarterfinal matchup is the 6 seed Believe versus the 3 seed Veterans. Believe did win the only matchup of these teams this season, week 8. Believe 135, Veterans 97. Believe finished third place in 2020, so coming off of a bronze medal. 8 playoff appearances in 10 years, pretty impressive streak there. Doesn't quite compare to Keegan's, but again, you know, continued success, which is what organizations want to see, and their fans can't complain about that. Roller coaster season for the Believe squad this year. They won 2, lost 5, won 3, lost 2, won 2. I remember early in the season when we thought that, you know, Girio was cooked and he had a lot, he's got some talent on his roster. So to think that those were ultimately going to be squandered was interesting. So when I look at the Girio's roster, there's a few kind of pockets that jump out at me. First and foremost is the Mahomes-Kelsey stack. Right. One of the things that I think is funny, I think this largely has been considered a down season for both Kelsey and Mahomes. Mahomes is currently the QB5 and Kelsey is the QB2. So a little bit below where they were drafted, but pretty damn close. Right. However, when I guess the moral of my story is Kelsey's been better than the narrative that surrounds him, and he's probably the victim of his own success there, just putting up, you know, so many elite tight end seasons. However, they do have a little bit of concern as Kelsey's last 2 weeks, he's been in the mid-20s as far as tight end performances, both the last 2 weeks. We talked about Jonathan Taylor earlier. I think when you look at draft capital, I think, you know, it's pretty much inarguable. The fantasy MVP this season has been Cooper Kupp. He was drafted as the 17th wide receiver. I know personally I fucked up and passed on him twice. And he is currently 80 points better than the number 2 wide receiver year to date. The other impressive stat I found on Cooper Kupp, he has finished in the top 8 for wide receivers in 10 of 13 weeks. Just consistency that has not been seen historically in the out of the wide receivers in fantasy football. And you move on to the backfield. It doesn't jump out at you on paper, but, you know, both James Conner and David Montgomery have significant roles in their respective offenses, right? We talk all the time about volume. Volume's what you want. Volumes is what got Najee Harris to, that number 2 spot that you mentioned earlier. And Connor specifically has really thrived since Chase Edmonds went on IR. He was supposed to come back this past week. He didn't, you know, we'll see. And it does sound like Connor got banged up at the end of last night's game. We'll just have to see how that plays out and if that affects the Girio squad moving forward.
Yeah, I think that that Connor getting banged up, I think that's wishful thinking on your behalf there, Michael. Just so they get Edmonds back into the fold this week.
I've got sources.
So they, Girio and Believe are going to match up against the Veterans. Obviously, if you talk to Veterans owner Brian Trakey, he's going to be the first one to tell you that he's the only 3-time champion in the league. There's certainly quite a few folks that have 2 championships that are in the playoff mix this year to possibly join him as a 3-time champion. But the Veterans did win the championship of this league 3 times, only team to do so in 2006, 2009, and 9 years ago in 2012 were the 3 times that the Vets reached the peak, the precipice of this sport known as Lakeshore Boys Fantasy Football. And for as good as the veterans have been in those three championship years, the lows are just as dramatic for this team. Finally going to get the gull off their back this year, snapping the two-year streak of earning the What Do You Mean Walking Around Derby last place trophy. So if you want to get that over to Groot, if you haven't burned it yet, Brian, it's now free for you to release that over to Groot. So making return to the playoffs for the first time since 2017. And interestingly enough, the last playoff victory for the veterans was in the 2012 season, the last championship run. And interestingly enough, he matched up against Believe on his way to the championship that year. So rematch of the last time that the veterans had won the championship. 0-4 in the playoffs since 2012. This season started 0-2, but interestingly enough, had two different winning streaks. The veterans have 9 wins, and they used a 5-game winning streak between weeks 3 and week 8. Then they lost 2, and then they won 4 between weeks 10 and week 13, a loss against the Southern Mafia to end the regular season, but 165 points in that matchup. And you got to hand it to owner Brian Trakey. You know, I know there was a lot of questions around some of the picks that he made, but he drafted a solid group of running backs, getting Nick Chubb, getting Lenny in round 6, who's the RB5 this season, and then James Robinson, who has tailed off a little bit in the recent weeks and not getting the volume he was early in the season. So maybe a little bit banged up. And then obviously the veterans, they get a lot of credit too for the free agent acquisition of Cordero Patterson. He's the RB7. He's kind of that, you know, slash type of running back receiver kind of guy. And the way that they're using him in Atlanta certainly bodes well for fantasy statistics. So good job there. And he also struck gold with rookie standout Ja'Marr Chase. I know that at one point we talk about Cooper Kupp, who's on the other side of this matchup, but Chase and Kupp were 1-2 for a good portion of the season. And, you know, since week 8, Chase has put up fewer than 13 points since week 9, and the first 8 weeks of the season had 13 or more. So definitely a little bit of a decline. And the only time over that 13 points was this last week, 25 points, where he had the 2 late touchdowns to force that game into overtime. But definitely have to give the veterans credit for getting striking gold with the rookie Chase, and also have to be a little bit concerned about where he stands here in that Cincinnati offense, and you know, if he's going to have the same success as he did the first part of the season.
Yeah, I you know, a couple of things jump out to me where you said there. I certainly think there's some concern that Ja'Marr Chase hit the proverbial rookie wall, right? Looking at his weekly finishes from week 8 to week 13, he was 26, 31, 28, 54, and 35. So certainly not great there, but big bounce back week this past week. And when you look at Leonard Fournette, right? Nobody saw this coming, right? If they did, he would have been drafted a lot higher. But he's the kind of guy, you know, across the fantasy football spectrum, not just this league, that he's winning leagues for people, right? He's that, when you can hit on a guy like that late in the round, you know, that's going to be a big difference maker. And I think, that's proved to be the case so far. You know, it's a little bit scary to see James Robinson, you know, wasn't high in him coming into the season. He had some good weeks, but Urban Meyer's really just seemed to fuck that whole team up so bad that I think he had 3 carries last week or something like that, like 4 carries. I don't know, but that's just, it's a disaster down there in Jacksonville. And you'd hope for, you know, I guess I would just say you got no confidence they're going to come out with a good game plan, even though they've got a good matchup in their first round playoff matchup.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's interesting because the veteran squad, they like to start that kind of quad back Because Cordero Patterson, you know, the veterans have him as a wide receiver here. He's the RB7 starting in wide receiver. You know, we've seen a couple guys kind of cross over this year between him and Deebo Samuel, kind of being able to start that type of player who is going to get rushing yards and some receptions at the wide receiver position and then start three other running backs is an interesting dynamic that, you know, you really don't see in fantasy football. So it's going to be interesting to see those four running backs start for the veterans this week and along with Ja'Marr Chase. So, you know, it's definitely a different type of lineup, but, you know, Lenny's going to have a tough time this week against New Orleans. They're pretty good against the run, you know, number one against running backs in fantasy. So that's going to be a tough matchup. But some of the other matchups, anytime you build your roster around Aaron Rodgers, like the veterans have, along with those great running backs, you're going to have an opportunity to win fantasy games and fantasy championships because Rodgers gets hot and has 40 for, you know, four straight games at the right time, and you're sitting there in the championship. So it's definitely going to be an interesting matchup between the veterans and Believe.
Yeah, you love Aaron Rodgers, so I don't think I can stomach much more of that. So let's move on to our I should have used the word I missed my opportunity for penultimate. Fuck. I got to go back to podcasting school, I suppose. Our last matchup of the day between the high-flying Eaglers and Southern Mafia. Eaglers did win the fast food bet and beat Southern Mafia 108-95 in week 9. What do you got on this matchup, Bong Man?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we're very familiar with each other here, and we do this podcast together. So, you know, it's what do I have on your team here? Anyways, you're the 2011 and the 2013 champion, so that is good for you. But it's been 8 years since you've been able to, you know, reach the championship or win the championship. 2018, we played in the finals. Sorry, just gathering my notes here.
Yeah. Fire up that fax machine. Let us know when you're
ready. Yep. Thank you. I'm just waiting for the dial up here. So interesting. The Southern Mafia is a franchise that has 149 wins and 149 losses and 2 ties in their franchise history. So sitting exactly at 500, second straight year in the playoffs. This is a team that was under 500 up until week 11 and used a strong finish to bust through that and, you know, win the last part of their schedule to get into the playoffs. You know, obviously, you know, you mentioned it, Mike, but you and I, we did meet a couple of years ago in the finals. So we do have that playoff history between Southern Mafia and the high-flying Eaglers. You know, really for Southern Mafia, it is a quad box of pass catchers on this team between Tyreek Hill, Lockett, Kittle, and Samuel, who might just be coming together at the right time for this team, for them to make a run. And it shows in winners of 3 straight, averaging 161 points in that 3-game winning streak, really relying on George Kittle and Tyler Lockett, who's finding a pulse. And, you know, this matchup, not only interesting because we have the podcast together and, you know, we're doing this preview together and have, you know, met in a recent fantasy Super Bowl, but also because the trade between these two teams, Southern Mafia and High Flying Eaglers, where Mafia acquired George Kittle to really round out those 4 strong pass catchers. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of this week who won that trade as well, whether it was Southern Mafia or High Flying Eaglers. And interesting, Mafia's roster now looks a lot different than it did at the beginning of the season. There was 6 total trades in this league, and Southern Mafia was involved in 3 of them. And not only that, but this is a team, the Southern Mafia, who completed the most transactions this season of any team, with 37 transactions completed for Southern Mafia. So that pass catching group, and then Javonte Williams has been a solid running back for them. And AJ Dillon, we talked about it when we looked at the F boys, but AJ Dillon also for that team is a guy who is starting to take over the volume. He might not necessarily be getting all of the touchdowns, but you know, led the team in carries as well as rushing yards this last week. So that's a guy who, if he stays in the lineup for Southern Mafia, is one that can produce. Also, I know acquired via trade Chase Edmonds, Southern Mafia might be trying to get him back into the lineup here, depending on what his status is for with his injury. So it'll be interesting to see how the lineup changes between now and when games kick off this weekend. But Southern Mafia obviously riding high coming into the game, like I said, averaging 161 in the last three. So definitely has the ability to put up some huge numbers.
Yeah, obviously a team I'm relatively familiar with. A couple of things that I wanted to ask you about and see if you were aware. So are you aware of the Virgin narrative that's going on in Seattle?
I'm sorry, come again?
So in 2019, Tyler Lockett wrote a book saying that he was a virgin and he was saving himself for marriage. And ever since the DK Metcalf orgy story broke, Metcalf's targets are way down and Lockett's targets are up. So Wilson himself, a virgin until he met his wife, really bonding over that. And there's a lot of smoke to that fire there, that there's they've found a common bond there.
I don't understand how that's relevant. This is all bullshit.
And the other thing that doesn't make sense to me, why, if Cordarrelle Patterson's eligible at running back, why isn't Debo? I mean, come on. Let's get your shit together, CBS.
I would talk to the folks that make San Francisco's roster. I'm sure that if they change him to running back, he'd be available here.
Yeah, I don't need him there, so I'm not worried about it. Just really good insight there, Eddie. You're really a skilled craftsman.
Yeah, whatever.
So let's take a look at the high flying Eaglers, huh? You know, as we mentioned, the Eaglers won the 2018 title. They have not cashed since. They did have a hangover year in 2019, missing the playoffs, but now have made the playoffs in consecutive seasons. The Eaglers were 2-4 after week 6. They strung up, put together a 7-1 stretch since then. So I think it's you can make an argument that they are the hottest team in the league heading into the playoffs. So a very dangerous team to be facing right now. And as much as I hate to admit it, TB12 is the motor that drives the Eaglers' car. Brady is the number one QB on the season. When you factor in that he adds nothing with his feet, unless F.A. Obata's in the open field, motherfucker, it's even more impressive in modern fantasy football. In the backfield, Austin Eckler has been a stud. Eckler's had 9 rushing touchdowns career, a stat that somebody got mad at me for pointing out in the preseason, but again, just facts. He's had 9 rushing touchdowns this season alone. His health is certainly a concern. They do have a Thursday night game, and
he's fine.
Yeah, allegedly. So we'll see what happens there. Devonta Freeman has done an admirable job trying to solidify the RB2 spot within the Eaglers roster. You may be surprised to know Freeman has finished in the top 20 running backs 3 of the last 4 and 4-6 weeks. Interestingly, the only pass catcher the Eagles drafted that is currently on their roster is spot starter Tyler Boyd. A key move for the Eagler was adding Mike Evans, as you mentioned earlier, week 8 to stack with Brady. That stack has averaged 46 points per game since that trade. Also, I thought for a while that Van Jefferson was undervalued by the owners of this league. Even before the Robert Woods injury, as soon as the Rams cut DeSean Jackson, Jefferson's snaps went way up. His routes went way up. And then the Eaglers were the aggressive team in the fab after Woods got done, who you know, he was looking to replace Woods, but you know, he made an aggressive move and he's reaped the benefits of that. So I think that's you know, that's been a nice addition to the squad and added a little bit more consistency. What do you got to defend yourself?
Yeah, I think that you did a pretty good job summing my team up, and definitely, you know, not as strong as the Eaglers would like to be in the pass catching game, since the Woods injury. But the acquisition of Evans has obviously been great for the team, and although winning all those games now, it's just in fantasy you have to think that you're going to have a couple of duds here and there. So we'll see if it's maybe time for a drop off, and you know, there has to be some concern for your team as well with.
Nah, dude, you're good.
With there has to be some concern with Tyreek Hill for Southern Mafia, combined 15 points the last 2 weeks, and these Thursday night games. You mentioned it with Eckler, because of his health, but these Thursday games can be such a slog. So, any concern about Tyreek Hill heading into this week?
Yes and no. I kind of view it both ways, right? It's hard to expect the performance Kittle's put up the past couple of weeks, right, to be super repeatable. And Hill on the same way from the low perspective, right? He hasn't done anything in a few weeks. So I think there's an opportunity to bounce back there. And, you know, you talked about the, you know, whatever, I've averaged 500 points over the last 3 weeks or something, and I've done that with absolutely no production out of the quarterback slot. So we'll see, you know, we'll see if other players can step up to make moves here.
Literally don't have any good quarterbacks on your roster.
I can't argue with that statement.
All right. So that, does that wrap up our preview of the matchups?
I think that about does it. All right, Eddie. So we've beat these games to death. Let's make some sure to be wrong predictions. Lay it on me, brother.
Yeah, I think in the first matchup, the 1-8 matchup, the F boys versus Rammers. I got to go with the F boys. Like their pass catchers, just the amount of targets that Goodwin and CeeDee Lamb have been getting lately, I think that propels them to victory over Rammers. I'd like to see Rammers win. Just based on not being in the playoffs for the last decade, but I do think the F-Boys get the win.
Yeah, hard for me to disagree with you here, right? You know, I've vocalized my concern. I think their backfield is decreasing their workload. You know, that gives me some pause. I ultimately do think that they'll be able to beat the Rammer squad. But I tell you, nothing would make me happier than Jonathan Taylor running for 17 touchdowns and beating the Patriots, and then the fuck boys get them knocked out of contention. It's really not personal, but I just have zero interest in seeing you know, back-to-back championships in this league. Yeah. So,
no, I never want to see back-to-back championships. That and you know, I'd love to get somebody else a third championship as well.
Same. So then we've got the 2-7 hoodies and the Priz bag. So I've made my stance pretty clear here, right? I'm going to go with the hoodies. I think they're a better team. Hopefully Ramondre Stevenson, you know, catches COVID or something really bad happens to him. But other than that, I think they're going to upset Prizbags. And I'm not even sure Prizbags know this league still exists. Well, you know, or that we're in the playoffs or that football exists. So, you know, it's just really hard for me to expect a lot out of his squad this time of year.
Yeah, and I made my intentions very clear that I hope this game ends with both teams being disqualified, but we know that's not going to happen, and Hoodies won the earlier matchup in a rout in week 8, and I know that history has no has nothing to do with this particular matchup, but Priz is 7-13 all times against Hoodies, and there's just some teams that you have a hard time getting past regardless of whether that those teams play into this team. And, you know, so I think that Priz has a tough time getting over on hoodies. And I think they get the W and have the lower seed move on here. So the 7 seed advances.
Couldn't agree more. Do you want to lead us into the next one?
Yep. So the veterans, the 3 seed and Believe, you know, Jirio had the second highest point total in the league. Pretty solid team. You know, it was something when I was looking at the matchups here, with the regular season winding down, I really wanted to avoid Ruggiero's team. I thought that it might be the team that was, to quote Adam Buchek, peaking at the right time, to make a run here. So, you know, it's going to be a tough matchup for the veterans. The veterans have had good success, like we talked about, with, you know, those 4 running backs that they're going to be starting this week. But ultimately, I think Believe gets past the veterans. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be a blowout necessarily, because the veterans can put up a ton of points. It might be another one of those 170, 165 type of games.
Yeah, pretty unfortunate. We didn't even mention it in week 14, rivalry week. Veterans caught the L while being the second highest scoring team in the league. And I didn't look to see if that would have changed his playoff matchup at all, if had he won that, but you know, another, it's a story for another day. And this is going to be the first game that we disagree on. And, you know, I think it's actually going to be the only game we disagree on, to be honest, in this first round, at least. You know, I've been doubting the veterans all season. I didn't have them in the playoffs as, you know, in our preseason preview. I didn't love their draft. Talked a little bit about the Cordero Patterson as a good acquisition. You know, picked up Zach Moss at the right time to win some games. So I'm just, you know, I'm not picking against the veterans. And I'm gonna ride them. I think they're gonna, you know, continue their well performances, their good performances, and knock off the 6 seed. Believe.
I love my brother, and he loves me. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. We can get Teresa on the line if we need to, but. And then that brings us to our fourth and final quarterfinal here. And I think this one's pretty easy to see. I think we can all agree. I've got the High-Flying Eaglers defeating Southern Mafia, as we talked about. High-Flying Eaglers, hottest team in the league, 7-1 coming into the playoffs, averaging somewhere around 250 points during that stretch. We'll get Elias to check that, but... yeah, I don't have much more to say there. I think they've got good matchups. On paper, the Saints is a good matchup. You know, you'd hear a lot about Marshawn Lattimore being able to shut down Mike Evans. And then, you know, you look back earlier in the season and Brady put up 40 and didn't break a sweat against them. You know, I think Eckler will be fine. And, you know, when good teams play, one of them has to win. So High-Flying Eaglers in a close one.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I don't think it's going to go that way. You know, I think the Southern Mafia has a team that is also one of those ones, 161 points average over the last 3 weeks. High-Flying Eaglers have had a good run to end the season, have put up some good numbers, but you know, not those over the top 160, 170, 180 point totals like the Southern Mafia have. So I have the Southern Mafia winning this one and advancing and sending the HFEs home early, but hopefully in a tight one, the way the 4-5 battle is supposed to be.
Wow. Wow. The audience didn't see that one coming. So I'm surprised there. So it's going to move us into the semifinals. So my semifinals matchups are the F-Boys and the Hoodies F-Boys versus the Hoodies and the Veterans versus the High-Flying Eaglers. And we'll just dive right into it here. I've got the Hoodies defeating the F-Boys as they did in rivalry week. And I've got the High-Flying Eaglers defeating the Veterans to go back to the championship.
How as much as, as much, Yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love to beat back-to-back Trakeys, obviously I don't have those matchups here. I have F-Boys versus Hoodies with the Hoodies advancing, Southern Mafia versus Believe with Believe advancing. So both of us have the Hoodies in the finals.
Interesting. Hopefully that's, you know, doesn't come true. And your 2021 Lakeshore Boys champion, as I see it, is Tom Brady and the High Flying Eaglers.
I don't like that because I feel like there's an element of jinxing happening here. But on my side of the bracket, I have Believe becoming the second three-time champion in the league, joining the veterans and giving them some company with that three-time championship status.
Yeah, if I've told you once, I told you 1,000 times, jinxes aren't real. But I hope you have done that to the Hoodies, that's for sure. Or wait, I forget who you even picked. Did you pick the Hoodies?
We both picked the Hoodies.
I picked the Eaglers.
I picked Believe to win. But we picked them. We picked the Hoodies to win, too.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't listening to you when you were talking. It's my fault. Well, that is going to do it. Put a bow on this 2021 regular season. I really appreciate you joining me this evening, Edward. I hope you know, you have a wonderful evening and all your hopes and dreams come true.
Thanks for having me on the show. If anybody's still listening, I'd be really shocked. Good luck to all the playoff participants. Hopefully each one of you wins in your own special way.
Yeah, the teachers will still be listening. They don't have anything to do. It's not like they have a playoff game to get ready for. And again, I will reiterate what Edward said. You know, good luck to all the playoff competitors. And I hope you all have a joyous and happy holiday season. This is the Southern Mafia Podcast. Thank you for tuning in.